Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush, LA edition. I came out here, everyone. Well, let's be honest. I came out here to meet Ben Sinclair. Could have done this one over the phone, but I've had Ben from High Maintenance on my list for, since the inception of the show. I've been bugging HBO, and it never quite worked out, but they finally said, hey, he's available. He's going to be in LA, and he can do it over the phone. And I said, that's okay. I'll just come out there. Because I couldn't resist. High Maintenance is one of my favorite shows ever, really. It's high on my list of all-time favorite shows. I was an early adopter, as I told him, for the web series, and just loved that so, so much. And then when it came over to HBO, it was just great, and did not lose a step. It got even better. And I'm so glad that they're supporting his show and behind it in such a positive way. And just started season three. It's excellent. He says that he has high hopes for season four, which makes me really happy. And they say not to meet your heroes, everyone, but I disagree because Ben was, he was great. He was such a nice guy, such a genuine dude, and exactly as you would hope that he would be if you're a fan of High Maintenance and the guy. And if you know the show, you know what I'm talking about, the character with no name. So anyway, Ben and I had a talk about his... about High Maintenance and his career and kind of life. He's a bit of a deep thinker, as you would imagine. Turns out he listens to Stuff You Should Know, everyone, and that made me happy. He was like, hey, I know you. And that was super cool, as was his pick, Teen Wolf. When it came through from the PR person that Teen Wolf was his pick, I thought it might have been a joke at first, but then I realized that it was not a joke at all. He loves this movie. It was very important to him as a kid, and as you will hear, there are many, many Teen Wolf references peppered throughout High Maintenance that I never noticed and that are going to be coming up on this upcoming season that's playing out right now. So I enjoyed our talk. I enjoyed watching Teen Wolf and talking about it with him. So here we go, everyone, with Ben Sinclair on Teen Wolf. Conan.
Yeah.
Way to go, man.
Never heard of him.
You've been on probably, right?
No, I haven't been on.
Really?
I've been on to Colbert and Seth Meyers, but never Conan.
Yeah. He's a hero.
He reminds me of Tintin, you know?
Yeah, he does.
I don't know if he'll like to hear that, but that's what I see.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, I didn't ever think I was going to look at you. I had no idea you had such a beard.
I had no idea that you listened to Stuff You Should Know because... this is the first time I've ever been legit a little nervous for
Why?
One of these.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, dude. I watched the web series, like when it was the web series.
Yeah.
I don't remember who turned me on to it, but I got in. I was an early adopter. Yeah. And you remind me of my friend Billy, who passed away a couple of years ago. So there was always this like, there's a show that I love.
Yeah.
And the guy on it reminds me of Billy.
Oh, that's
so that
sweet,
was very
man.
Special.
Yeah, that's very
and
nice.
And especially since he passed away, it's like even
yeah.
more special.
Well, I assure you that him and I are probably the same level of kind. And it was a well-placed projection.
Great. Good dude.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from Phoenix, Scottsdale.
Oh, okay.
I know Teen Wolf so well because it was too hot to play it in the summer times, and I would just watch it over and over and over again.
Right.
A lot of movies I did that with.
I lived in Yuma for a year.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What the hell happened there?
No, it's a everyone who knows Arizona always asks that question as a follow-up because Yuma's a weird place to move to.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law's a Marine.
Uh-huh.
My sister lived there with him. I had crushing debt from living in New York.
Uh-huh.
And then they said, I was looking for a change. They were like, why don't you move out here? And I was just kind of floating around at the time. I wasn't married, like no kids or anything back
yeah.
then.
Now you're married with kids in Atlanta?
Married with a daughter in Atlanta.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's it like living there?
It's great. You ever been?
No.
You should come.
I haven't been outside of the airport at all. I figure I'll go for work one day. But
yeah, sure. A lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah. That's the long haul? You're going to stay there?
Yeah. Like that's where I'm from.
Yeah.
Lived away for a lot of years, like 20-something years, and came back from here. This is where I was living before I moved to Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And it's great.
Does your the partner on stuff, does he still smoke cigarettes? I was worried.
Josh quit? Long time ago.
All right.
Yeah, he's
I was worried
good.
About that, man. You talked about his eating habits and smoking habits. I was like, shit, man, I don't want this to stop.
So I want to know a little bit before we get into the movie. I'll budget this out so we give Teen Wolf its due. But I got to talk about High Maintenance and like the transition from Vimeo to HBO. Like, what was that like?
Well, you know, the only real experience I have with making something on that level is with High Maintenance or even film production in general. I've only made content that I was acting in and that I was editing and making. So it felt like middle school, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like we were making them on our own. We were figuring out what the project was. And we made 13 of those episodes. And then Vimeo gave us some money to make 6 more. And then we were like, all right, here's like real – not – it wasn't real money, but here's something that looks like real money.
Were you guys like getting permitted and like was it – how legit was it?
It was like – half legit, okay. I would say.
Gotcha.
I think going to HBO and looking at all of our paperwork, they were like, whoa, how did you do this? We're like, well, Vimeo was trying something out. And I guess we got very lucky that nothing bad happened, I guess. But I would say the HBO move, you know, it's like going to high school. It really is like going
to
high school.
Grad school.
I feel like I'm in my junior year of high school where I'm like, all right, I've been here. This is my third year here. I know when to freak out.
Right.
I feel like the show is not over yet, even though we haven't had an order yet, but I have a feeling it's not over. So there's some stuff to look forward to, just feeling very secure by this time. But in doing it, it's how it always has been. We are working in our little bubble and it's never good enough. I was talking to Ira Glass about this. They're similar. The stories are never good enough. It's really hard on yourself kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Laboring, and if you laughed on the 49th time of watching it but not the 50th, then that part has to go or whatever. And I think the first season, because of just like, you know, existential stuff layered on top of personal stuff layered on top of career stuff, I think I was just kind of like, we wrote every episode and directed every episode, and I had a bigger part in editing every episode than I have in the past 2 HBO seasons. So I think I was just, I was probably freaked out. I was freaked out about it getting ruined. Like everyone else was probably freaked out who was fans from the web series.
Yeah, I was worried.
Yeah, for sure. But the truth is HBO, like, not only gives us creative freedom, but sometimes I'm like, hey, we're over here. Right. And then they're like, And I'm like, how is this? They're like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's good. And I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah.
So they let you guys do your thing then?
They really let us do our thing.
Uh-huh.
Truly. We're like the little tugboat
on
that thing. Like we know that we occupy a very kind of niche culty space that is like audience members who don't mind doing a little extra work and not like just served up everything. So, I would compare us to probably Kids in the Hall.
Uh-huh.
Like Kids in the Hall were doing their own thing up in Canada. There wasn't like any infrastructure up there from HBO to like watch over them or show up on set. So they just kind of made a bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the space we occupy again. And I hope to keep occupying.
Yeah.
I prefer that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was the one thing I remember when I read about – I remember reading the announcement and just – my wife was just shut up about it already. Like, I know your favorite little web show is now going to be a real show. And I know you're so proud of them because I feel like –
that's so sweet, man.
Well, that's what it feels like. I feel like especially when you adopt something early like that, you feel like you have a personal stake in it as a viewer, which is silly, but like you end up having this weird pride. Like, I was proud of you guys. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, man, that's very sweet.
But the fact that it was HBO, I remember thinking like, all right, this isn't going to suck. It's not going to get ruined because it's HBO.
Well, we had a deal FX, a script deal that would have ruined the show.
Yeah,
for
that
sure.
would have. That's
yeah,
troublesome.
Yeah, yeah. So we, you know, it was a very incremental growth, mm-hmm. and at a certain point, like we realized that our power was in saying no over and over and over and over again until mm-hmm. the right person came along. And
right.
When our executive Nina Rosenstein came and met with us, it definitely was like, and we're going to make not just a pilot, six, right? And she's like, yep. Yeah.
Right.
And I'm like, and it's straight to series. No, uh-huh. none of this dancing around development thing. She's like, no.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. I mean, I probably could die tomorrow and have accomplished like 300% more than mm-hmm. I thought I would have ever accomplished of my goals in my life. So I feel pretty cool about
yeah.
the show, but also it was created initially to form an artistic community.
Right.
We were like, oh, I love this person and I know they're a good actor and I know this person has uh-huh. funny anecdotes and I know, you know. So we were looking to create a community, and that really does exist. And friendships come out of high maintenance and right. working relationships. And hopefully the word of mouth quality that mm-hmm. makes you proud of your favorite little show will kind of spread into like pie in the sky spinoffs. You
right.
know what I mean? Like every episode is like a pilot for
oh, sure.
a character's life. I would love to see it spread laterally yeah. and have all the people we came up with keep it going.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely, you guys took it almost like a world building approach, it feels like, mm-hmm. Without being like too structured. But I remember when I first started seeing characters popping up in other episodes in different places in their life, then I thought, all right, this is getting really interesting.
Yeah. What happens off screen is so much more interesting to us than what happens on screen. And that comes even in how we write stuff. Like we're like, oh gosh, how are we going to do a wedding or a believable build up to a wedding or this or that? Sounds like production heavy. And then we're like, hey, what if we start the whole entire episode after that all happened yeah. already? Everything already happened, and then this is just them dealing with their being alive
right.
after this climax. So that temptation to leave the dramatic stuff off screen uh-huh. and then refer to it it's a cool trick.
Yeah, it is.
It's certainly cheaper. And it lowers the bar.
Yeah, but it also, like, you're talking about just not serving up everything for a viewer. It really, there is so much that happens off screen and nothing's ever tied up with a bow. And it's just, it feels like you're peeking in on these stories. Mm-hmm. It was never a show about a weed dealer
yeah.
to me. It was always a show about New York City.
Yeah.
And then as the more I've watched it, I'm like, no, it's just a show about human beings.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it's so interesting to think about. I think it's weird. I think some of these emotions that are expressed in it are weird or kind of acidic or a little bit unnerving. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm always surprised at how many people are like, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I thought this was me outing myself as like an asshole. Like,
right.
Yeah, no, I'm an asshole.
No, it's just so true though. It's the human condition, like every week. And it's like, I mean, it is a New York show in a way because it's also shows the truest New York that I think I've seen.
Thanks, man.
So there's something to be said for that.
I would love to see this show done in other cities. Like,
yeah.
would love to see it done just because, like, our cities, our environments, like, affect us so greatly.
Yeah.
Like, the L.A. version of High Maintenance would be, like,
totally different show.
Totally, totally, totally. But,
the same.
Yes, but same sense of loneliness.
Yeah.
You know, it's really the whole... This is such a macro statement, but everything that's wrong right now is because people don't talk to their proximal neighbors.
Right.
The community, actual community, not ideological communities set up through apps.
Right.
But like physical sense of community, belongingness, all of that
yeah.
has bred to this deep pit of isolation and depression and
yeah.
a general kind of acceptance that you're, you know, that you got to work on yourself, capitalist dude. Like you
right.
you're an island. You can do all of that. And I think our show is oftentimes addressing how much we want to connect with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yet it's just not how things are done anymore in
right.
the way that feels to have lasting gratification.
Yeah. And the guy himself is such a, he is the through line, and he seems to wander in and out of these people's lives when they need him and not just for the weed.
Yeah.
Like that's the conduit for sure.
Yeah.
But it feels like, even the one guy who didn't even smoke, they just wanted the company.
Yeah.
Like just one of the sweetest, like most heartbreaking episodes.
Yeah, sir. I just got a little tingle up my spine just thinking about it.
That was
yeah,
so good.
He's so, and that the success of that is so largely due to Michael Cyril Crichton's performance in it, and it's just like mm-hmm. this total collection of like that apartment that we shot in was Russell, our manager's apartment. It's like a 400 square foot apartment
right.
in Chelsea. He doesn't live there anymore. Like it was. That apartment also created that feel. Like
uh-huh.
it is just the whole collection of all of these things that you would, if you saw a script in the final product, you would be like, oh wow.
A lot of improv going on?
It's not even just improv. Uh-huh. It's just like, yeah, I know we wrote this, but this is the prop we have and
right.
this is the time of day we have to shoot it in. So like, mm-hmm. why don't we just like schmuggy it all so that.
Right.
So that it works with what we have instead of trying to fit a circle in a square.
Yeah. I mean, I've made enough like little short films and things to know that being nimble like that is so the key.
Yeah. It also it makes the script seem like just like an instruction manual to how to construct the story, maybe depending
yeah.
on – it's like when intention, what I want to write meets attention. What do I have at my disposal?
Right.
What is the actual skill level of this actor for this
right.
For this emotional range? All right. Well, if you can't make it there, I'll pull it back.
Yeah.
And we'll see what we can make.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty loving, friendly set.
It is. It is, for sure. And it's tiring, you know. We are a very
low. Yeah, what's your schedule like?
It's like Monday through Friday, 14-hour days pretty much.
Right.
So
for how many weeks?
Straight. Like – if we 10 episodes, 10 weeks, 9 episodes
okay.
a season,
so one
nine.
Per.
So, yeah. And that's two stories. And each story has
right.
like a couple of locations.
Yeah.
So we are, it's a really wild puzzle because in the web series, it was like, oh, let's do a weekend.
Right.
I won't pay you, but it's only 1 or 2 days. And then we did actually go back and pay everybody for their work on the web series.
Oh, that's cool.
Once HBO came around.
And but recast, or not recast, but
we tried to keep it. I mean, we didn't recast one person. Why would we? We don't have someone saying that we have to. That was my biggest fear with FX.
Right.
And then that was one of the things with HBO. I'm like, we're not recasting anybody. And
they're
like, great.
Yeah. That's great. And the guy too, I think like at first you had that first season to get to know him a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but there wasn't a lot of personal stuff going on. And then the cool thing to see is as these seasons play out, the guy is coming out a little bit more, with his backstory. It's teased out, I think, just kind of perfectly.
Thanks, man.
Because like you want to know about him.
But also you don't, yeah.
But also you don't, but then you sort of do. Like I just started watching season 3, and that first episode is so good just to see some of his roots and where he came from. And I think that makes for a fuller picture, but you're doling it out in the right increments, I think.
Well, I think it's like getting to know somebody. Like the first you get to know somebody, it's based off their superficial charm and charisma or
right.
your relationship. And then you care about them a little more and their guard is dropped. So that would be like when the guy goes to the hospital and you kind of see that.
Yeah.
And then you are rooting for them to get what they want, which mm-hmm. is kind of what we're starting here, is like that character is definitely looking for something. I don't know
right.
if he knows what it is, but he's definitely seeing something more than he's wondering if his call – if he's met his calling,
yeah.
so to speak.
Yeah, and seeing that episode especially with the dad and hearing people describe him about the no judgment.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was one of the big things that always stuck with me about the guy. I was just like, he's just always a kind ear and he's never judgy.
I like that about him. I get frustrated about that too, because I don't think that's realistic.
Right.
I think that, like, I always want to poke a hole in anybody's illusion.
Right.
Because it's like, I would love to be like the guy all the time, but like, if we all had it all figured out and weren't judging anybody, we just wouldn't be on this earth. We would have passed on to Nirvana or whatever. Right. Like, we all got shit we're trying to work out.
Yeah.
And I've been very excited to kind of pull some stuff back. I think in this week's episode, he does show a tinge of judgment, which is very interesting. And actually, an episode that was kind of inspired by Teen Wolf that's coming up too, you see him actually being like, oh my God, like I don't think he handled that situation the best.
Right.
So I'm kind of excited to tease out the fact that this person is flawed.
Yeah, there are cracks.
And there are cracks, and that, like, as much as in the same way that it's always more interesting to let your imagination fill out that climax that you start after I was talking before about, I like to drop just one little inkling that of character information that that ripples out into your imagination, so that you are kind of understanding the human experience, that you're not, it's not always going to work out. You're not always going to say the right thing or do the right thing, but that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, you got to show a lot of restraint, I think. Especially like when you were talking about just the deal that you were making with HBO, and like, you knew you had something valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think the instinct for someone making a web show would be to jump at FX or whoever.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys had other overtures, and to know, like, you know, that was your...
Yeah, we said no so many times to so many things.
That's so, like, powerful.
Yeah. Oh, at a certain... When you know you have something good, no is the password to yes.
Yeah.
And you have to... Like, I also look at it like, if you're... have a beam of light coming through like a dark room, all of the negatives, the blackness, all of the darkness, the no, this photon is not on, saying no to all of those other photons and saying yes only to that stream of light is what's beautiful about it.
Yeah.
It is the absence and your resistance to just accepting everything.
Yeah.
Like, you want to think of creativity as like this expansive thing, but at a certain point you have to edit down and you have to be like, no. Yes, that. Otherwise it's all just a blank white screen, you know?
Yeah. That's so cool that they just stepped out of the way. They'll let you guys do your thing, because the music and the cinematography and everything is just so beautiful. And it was, and I think what it did obviously is afforded you guys, just to do more of the same, but like bigger and better and more beautiful. And
thanks, man.
Maybe pay for a little more music that, you know, he might want to get.
Oh, the music, man. Because of our budgetary constraints, I have just been hunting for unknown music that
still
we can afford. And that has really led to an exciting deepening of my musicology.
Yeah.
I hope to one day be able to. It would be so cool just to make a show that's like cool images and cool music. Just remember that show Liquid Television?
Yeah.
MTV. I would love to do something like that.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the choices you guys make with the cinematography, I think, are always, are often unexpected. And, like, how involved are you in all of it still?
Very involved.
I know you're directing now.
I mean, we've been directing. Katya and I have directed and written every episode, with a few exceptions, up until season two. And season two was the first season we invited guest directors in a writer's room to join us. And I think season two really, our work got a lot better from that collaboration.
Yeah.
And now Then, but we still were a directing couple that season. This season, I direct our we are listed as directors on our own. But if I had to be completely honest, nothing's changed.
Oh,
like,
really?
We're still
we're still
helping each other, and and it's like, and there is a lot of like, you know, I'm good at pulling up above, I'm good at seeing blocking very well and like having a bird's eye view of a room and a, and even the structure of a story, where she's very detail oriented and can sense authenticity a little more intuitively than I can. So
that's pretty cool.
We really help each other out. What was the question that was before this?
It's okay. Cinematically?
Oh,
like
cinematically.
How, yeah.
So our DPs, there are three of them. It's very unusual to have so many DPs on a show, but they all bring something different. And we pair up stories to DPs who we think will lend.
Oh, that's cool.
Will match their temperament, and they'll set them up for success.
Yeah, I love that last shot of the season 3, episode 1, where the camper, you know, takes a shit on the highway. And you know, the camera car just keeps going.
Yeah, we got stoked about that.
Yeah, that was such a cool shot.
Yeah,
such a cool
a
way to do
shot.
That, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of times, like, so that shot wasn't included in the first assembly. A lot of these things are like, you watch it and you make a mental note. And, and I'm in the scene, so I can't... Like, I don't have a walkie-talkie to be like, that was a good show. You know what I mean? Like, there's the being in it and the way you felt is all remembered throughout. So in some ways, when it gets cut up between the script supervisor making notes for the editor and the editor wasn't there, they don't know that, like, the part of the scene that was the best was, like, that hiccup that the actor made before we were – they knew we were rolling or whatever. You know, there's a lot of going
back. Like when
back.
Your voice cracked in that episode.
Oh, yeah. Big
so
time.
Many, like, great real moments
big
like that.
Big time. It's all hunting for those. Who cares what we wrote? What was the most – what was the most interesting thing that happened while we were shooting?
Yeah.
Let's see if we can support that with the footage we've got.
Right. What's your favorite part of the process?
I do like editing so much.
Yeah.
But
that was always my favorite thing too.
Yeah. It's really – that is where the movie gets made.
Yeah.
And maybe it's – maybe I'm a control freak, but that's where I feel a lot of control and very much like, all right, well, this is what we have to work with and we want to make it good. The rest of it is like – oh, like thinking about what the weather is going to do and how I'm going to have to rewrite everything based on the weather and all like the production things is like truly takes years off of your life.
Yeah.
All of the worry and trying to anticipate and get on top of it. Whereas in editing, it's like, well, I need this to be better. Can we go get it? Can we go make it? Whereas with filming, it's like, you can have this or you can have this. You can kill this baby or you can kill this baby. It happens in editing too. But
yeah. What about like we have a lot of listeners that, you know, make their own shorts and stuff like that. When and you know what a tough road that is to hoe.
Yeah.
What like piece of advice would you give someone when things are going pear-shaped and you still have to like do the scene? Like how do you get rid of that shit?
You get really
and still
quiet.
Do something good.
You get really quiet inside and you just respond to what do I like right now? And whatever you like, you try to make more of that happen. And like, especially for a web short or a show, it's like you're just catching a vibe, really. I only have 2 to 5 minutes attention span to watch your short web thing.
Right.
So I better like it. So whatever is the best, put that over everything and the good stuff will grow from there. Trying to make something work that's not working, just like let it go.
Right.
And if there's got to be something that was working, and then cut everything down around that thing that's working, and it'll look like you that's what you wanted to do the whole time.
That's good advice, man.
Yeah.
What's ahead for the show? How much can you talk about that?
I'm waiting on another season order, but if we get one, I'm ready to go. There's a bunch of unused ideas that we haven't gotten around to that have had some time to cook and mature a little bit more. And there's people I want to work with. I'm already talking with actors who I'm like, hey, I would love to see you next year. Identifying talent, trying to think about stories to adapt maybe because
interesting.
we've, you know, we're running out of tricks. Right. So it would be cool to this year maybe break open the idea of taking some of my favorite short stories writers and making them into a weed delivery, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a cool idea. Mm-hmm. How does that work when you're waiting on to know whether or not you have a season as far as giving it a satisfying potential series finale? Mm-hmm. Like, do you have to think about that? Like, yeah, hey, if this
is it. I definitely do. And sometimes, like, we'll put a, like, for this last episode, you'll see, it's very, there's like a, this very emotional feeling at the end. And sometimes we're like, oh, it seems like this is the end with this song. You might not want to use the song because it seems like the end altogether. Right. We did that last season too, where we're like, oh, this seems like the end of the show.
Yeah.
And I guess that you want that flexibility. I think I want it to feel conclusive no matter what.
Yeah.
I keep joking. We're not going to do this because I've joked about it too much. But I keep on saying, and then the camera will pull back and then there's two moons. And then that's the last shot of the whole series.
But, that would be so great.
But we're not going to do it. I have better ideas than that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months. Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to Teen Wolf. I could do this all day, and I know you're on a schedule. Although I do want to know, and I know you've teased a little bit more about the guy's name. I'm happy to never know it. Mm-hmm. But do you know it?
You know, I thought I knew it, but it kind of changes.
Oh,
I kind of think like I have a front runner that always kind of changes throughout time.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it would be so dumb if it was Ben. Like, it's not the right name, but it's like there are some family names that I went through, and then my brother took one of them for his child, and I was like, freaking jerk.
Thanks
a
lot.
I can't name, like, my character after your kid now. So, yeah.
All right. I was just curious about that.
There is a name, but it's changed a couple times.
Okay, cool. All right, Teen Wolf is your pick.
I picked Teen Wolf.
That is your movie crush from 1985, released just 7 weeks after Back to the Future.
It was delayed because they were supposed to come around the same time.
Really?
Back to the Future really
had more juice.
It kind of took some steam away from it. In Brazil, the name of Teen Wolf is the boy from the future.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Back to the Future was really like the technodrome of that, that project.
Interesting. It's also funny that like Michael J. Fox was the biggest star in the world that year, probably.
Yeah, yeah. He allegedly hated that movie.
What, Teen Wolf?
Yeah, he hated it.
Really?
He thought it was dumb.
And huh.
It might have been.
Well.
But he thought it was.
I know the directive was we need something cheap and fast that we can shoot kind of on a budget and quickly.
I mean, that's my kind of movie.
Yeah,
man. That's what I like to do, I guess. Yeah, there are so many parts of that movie that really are in my fucking bones. Like the give me a keg of beer. Like
yeah, that line.
I was talking with Rabia, our publicity person, and we were going over just like that high school party, how you just were like, oh, that's how high school's going to be. It's going to be like.
Perhaps the greatest of all high school parties in film.
Yeah. And it was researched.
Really?
Yeah. First of all, I didn't know it's still today. It was supposed to take place in Nebraska. That's where it takes place.
Despite all the palm trees.
And what's his name? Yeah. Exactly. What's his name? The director went to Nebraska to like interview teens about parties.
Really? Because the shit that happens in that parties.
It's so organized. Everyone's having such a good time. And it's like, all right, we have a whole like set that we're going to do here. Yeah.
We have games.
Mm-hmm.
Very organized games.
And they like made Jell-O ahead of time, let it set so they could pour it down her shirt.
Uh-huh.
It was just incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And then the one lady who's with the top hat full of names.
Yeah.
What was her deal? Was that a high school student?
No, I don't know. I had thought about that she was hired. That was some sort of escort that they hired.
Okay.
But they all look old. Let's be real. They all look like they're 28 and 30.
I think, like, I watched it today on the plane, and it may have been maybe the first time I've seen it since the 80s.
Oh, really?
I think so, but it – Watching it, I must have seen it a ton of times because I was one of those kids who got HBO, lived on a very rural dirt road. Mm-hmm. And when cable TV came to my neck of the woods, it was a little late. Mm-hmm. And so MTV and HBO were just like constant for me.
Yeah, and you stayed up at night to watch the Red Shoe Diaries too, probably.
Well, I tried.
Yeah,
I was from a very Baptist family, so I was trying.
I was flipping through the TV on at night, and I saw like a boob on a Cinemax show, uh-huh. And then I totally was like, "Whoa!" Really brought back to that time where right. I would stay up late, and like my parents would like move, and I would like last channel. And,
oh yeah,
like,
I remember holding my finger on the remote yeah, in case like my parents sure. came in for.
I
stuff.
Think that is probably one of the most. Suburban experiences right. a young male can have when HBO is free.
Yeah, and we also had the thing on the cable box where you could it was scrambled, channels were scrambled, oh, yeah. and you could touch the buttons to try and clear up the picture.
Oh, I never touched the buttons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, like, I would go to the Playboy channel and try and get just, like, a glimpse of a partially scrambled breast.
How much more sexy is that? That is wildly more sexy than everything that is going on
today. It is,
today.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The unknown.
The desire, the want of the want. That yeah. is really the most interesting
sure.
thing.
Yeah, and when you're, like,
now teens don't have sex. Now teens are like, it's too much.
Is that true?
Yeah, there's less teens having sex.
Oh, wow.
Than in the past because they don't want to get annihilated by social media or whatever.
Oh, well, I certainly yeah. wasn't helping the numbers yeah. in the 80s. Yeah. I will say that.
Oh.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So Michael J. Fox is the worst basketball player in history, clearly, which kind of makes it for a fun transition, I guess,
mm-hmm.
once he becomes TW.
Yeah. And I was thinking about the message of the movie, which is really like you know, you don't need the wolf, just be yourself.
Sure.
But now that I've dabbled in a little of Jungian psychology,
uh-huh.
that shadow, that wolf was himself. He had to accept that as yeah. a part of himself. So it kind of, I'm a little unsettled now at this point in my life thinking that you just have to keep that hidden from people.
Yeah.
Even if it makes you more popular,
I
even if
had
they
the
like
same
it.
Thought.
I think he's got to reconcile it.
Uh-huh.
It would have been nice if he, you know, I guess he was a good sportsman for like not putting the advantage over, but
right.
I don't think it did well for like what happened. Well, now what do you do with the wolf?
Right.
Now what?
Because everyone knows.
Yeah, what's next?
Yeah. I mean, his dad seemed to have it all worked out.
His dad, we were just talking on the car over. Also, his dad looked like freshly bathed when we first saw him.
As
he
the
looked
wolf?
Like, yeah, he yeah. looked like he had been a dog that had just gotten out of the bathtub. It was a little
he did look nice.
Poofy.
And he had his glasses on and
everything. Yeah, he was poofy, yeah. And the focus group allegedly, this is all IMDb trivia,
yeah.
but they people laughed for a minute after they saw him with the glasses on. He looked silly, I guess.
Well, that was one of the indelible images to me. Like I remembered when I started watching this, I remember two things very specifically, the get me a keg of beer,
yeah.
and then the dad opening up that door and saying, what does he say? I guess this bears some explanation or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I suppose this bears some explanation.
Yeah. He was great too, that guy, the dad.
He was also
such a good character actor.
He was an Elf, I think, once.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
And he was a bad guy in Elf. And I was like, what? No way.
I wouldn't have bought that.
It flipped me, man. I got flipped.
Elf will do that, man. Yeah. It will flip your ass. what was it for you with this movie, though? Like, how, I mean, you were a kid, you were like one or two when it came out.
Yeah. I really liked that transformation scene. I used to go into my bathroom at night mm-hmm. pretending I was wolfing out, like holding my, you know, the back of my palms
yeah, yeah.
to the mirror and like contorting my face.
Really?
So much so, like the upcoming episode of the show has this moment portrayed of me as a child like wanting to wolf out so bad.
Really?
Yeah. I like that he was good at basketball because that was like big in our family. We were a basket because we were like Charles Barkley era sons. It
yeah.
was like really happening over in Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess I felt maybe I liked it because I felt non-athletic and there was this idea that you could just be better because of something inside you that was latent and uh-huh. that you didn't know. Maybe I felt like a loner. But ultimately, I I liked this idea of popularity. Like, he got popular when he was doing it, but I always felt like I knew how to, like, work a crowd, but ultimately I felt like a chubby kid who, like, wasn't good at sports or whatever, so I had engineered all of these, like, styles. I wasn't, like, styles, but, like, you know, I was able to be some sort of...
Because Styles is a psychopath.
He is a psychopath. You know, what I didn't have, because we taped it off of TV... And that was the version I watched. I missed some scenes. Like when he's in his garage and he says like...
He's looking for the weed.
Yeah, he's looking for the weed. I didn't see that until I was like 20, in my 20s. Really? I was like, what the fuck is this? When it came on and whatever version I was watching. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. I think I'd forgotten about that scene or maybe I didn't get it.
And they said, are you a fag or something? He goes, no, I'm not a fag.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, I know.
What? Anyway...
So that was cut out of the TV version, I guess.
And I'm glad that they did cut it out because they knew that you don't treat gay people like that. You don't talk about people like that. Maybe they didn't know. They just didn't want to see the weed. But
sure. Oh, that's right, because it was in that scene, wasn't it? Another thing really jumped out at me was with greater power comes a greater responsibility.
Yeah.
He says that line.
Yeah. In the IMDb, it says that he... The guy was a Spider-Man, a comic book fan, one of the writers.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So they lifted that from the comic.
Intentional lift, yeah.
Wow, because it's hard to get anyone to, like, online to admit that this used it, not first, but at least on screen.
Who doesn't want to admit it?
Well, I mean, any time you do a search like that, it all comes up Spider-Man. You have to really drill down and specify Teen Wolf to get any credit out of that line coming out of this movie.
I mean, I probably could... I don't know if I could recite every line from this movie, but I can do the intonation of everybody's voice for every line. I don't know if I'll get the words right, but I can.
You're not 21. You don't get damn beer. Can't you get that through your thick skull?
That guy was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was so angry at these children trying to buy beer.
Yeah.
You want to hear something cool?
Yeah.
Is Matt Adler, who plays Lewis.
Yeah.
He listens to Stuff You Should Know and sent us an email a few months ago and now listens to Movie Crush. So I emailed him today. I got a little surprise for you.
I have a surprise for Lewis after.
I emailed him today and said, by the way, I said, you'll be glad to know that Ben Sinclair of High Maintenance picked your movie. And he emailed back and said, well, we've all got problems. I hope you won't hold it against him. And then I said... And by the way, I said, I just finished it again. I said, Lewis is the only character in that movie who has a reasonable reaction to the fact that there is a wolf boy. And I said, and their shit has never worked out. That little character arc is never resolved.
Yeah.
And it really bugged me when I was watching it.
It bugged you.
Yeah, to not see it resolved because they had a problem.
So Ravi, our publicist, is sitting over here. Or at PR at HBO, I shouldn't say our publicist, that's not correct. But the PR at HBO, she told me that she had a crush on Lewis because he was being reasonable. Because he was like, he's the only one who's like, what's going on with you, man?
Yeah, because everyone gets on the TW train so unreasonably
fast. There was a crush based on that. That he was just being a character actor in a movie that everybody was shitting on, and he opened up she opened up a woman's heart to how it could be. You with a reason a reasonable man who just doesn't go with the height.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, I told him it bothered me that arc that character arc was never closed, and he said it true. He said, it's one of the great unanswered questions in my long and storied career. Or, and this is possible, no one cared. Sadly, I think they were planning a sequel of Lewis and Scott. I'm still waiting. So that's what he said, like two hours ago.
I would love to see Lewis's, like, there's like the Teen Wolf. And then if you trail off with Lewis, it's like Ordinary People or whatever. Right. And he's just like he's just having a really hard time.
Right. He's got his own shit going on.
They don't have Prozac yet. He's just got to deal with it.
Poor Lewis.
Just a kid in Nebraska.
I know, man. With all the palm trees. Did you see the sequel?
Yeah, it was Scott. No. Justin Bateman. I almost said Scott Baio, but no, Justin Bateman.
Yeah, that's a big diff.
Yeah, yeah. And the Styles changed too.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, they changed.
Was his name Styles still?
No, his name's Styles. And the Styles, his name's still Styles in the MTV show or whatever it is.
So the new version, you've seen the TV thing.
You know, my brother Daniel wrote for the first season.
Really?
And we were like diehard fans of Teen Wolf together, and he wrote for the first season.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this really, when you pick this,
this is like
this all makes sense now.
This is like, it actually hurt my feelings that all of these people associated with are saying how shitty it is because they just don't know. Like, The transformation song was my phone ring for a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, the music's pretty good.
And Miles Goodman, like, I still put on the YouTube of that, the transformation song,
uh-huh.
the song from the end credits,
and
there's the Boof song. I really like that Boof song.
Oh, we have about Boof?
We have a salute to the Boof scene also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, coming up.
Oh, man, I'm going to, like, totally be picking apart all these... references now.
Yeah. There was one scene where I'm like, I want it to look exactly like that. And they were like, well, there's not a tree here. It's for you to grab the branch. I'm like, put
right.
a tree there. And then we didn't even put, because the branch.
Oh, the sidewalk scene?
Yeah, yeah.
I totally
yeah.
noticed that move when he grabbed
the.
Yeah,
he and uh-huh. turns around. So we cut it out because it was really weird, obviously. But like,
right.
but yeah.
They didn't have like a grip off camera just holding like the branch of lotus.
Pretty much. That's pretty much what it was just like a shitty Home Depot plant that
right.
they just put in the middle of this park path, essentially. It didn't work.
Out of place.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Boof, she's the best. I mean, this movie is just the quintessential 80s movie in that like you had the understanding father, single parent.
Yeah.
You had the principal, the shitty principal that gets his in the end.
Yeah.
You had the beautiful girl that, of course, is with the dick, and the girl that you should be with, which mm-hmm. is Boof.
Yeah.
It's like all these great 80s tropes.
Yeah.
Kind of perfectly placed, but Boof is just so lovable and like...
it's true.
They but also just, fairly aggressive.
You know, so I watched that sidewalk scene a lot because I had to restage it. And
right.
like, you know... She's not the most dynamic actress I've ever seen, but she's really given it all she's got.
Yeah,
and in a way that's like nuanced, and her hands are in her everyone's hands are in their pockets the whole time.
I noticed that too.
Yeah, everyone's hands are in their pockets. What's going on?
Yeah,
yeah. But I appreciated that. It could have been like everyone's like, oh, so bad. It could have been so much worse, guys. I would say most of the movies that come out now are worse than Teen Wolf.
Right.
Truly.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. She's lovable, though. Like, that was the girl that I would have fallen for in high school.
Why?
Oh, I think because she was nice and not threatening.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have, like, from afar. And, in fact, I'm sure I did. Looked at, the most beautiful girl in school.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never, like... I mean, he straight up asked her out,
mm-hmm.
kind of like right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah.
Asked if he could drive her to the
and then Mick
to the party.
Back. Yeah, yeah.
And I was not nearly that aggressive.
Yeah.
I was way too scared for something like that.
Well, we had to see him try and fail.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
That's true.
I wish that we could three-dimensionalize all those characters. I wish we could make the Pamela, I wish we could fill her out a little bit more. I don't think it's fair that she's just like the jerky hot girl.
Right.
You know, I would like to see why Styles is a sociopath and why Lewis is
Styles is
clinically
so great,
depressed.
Though. So over the top.
Yeah. I don't know if they did the right thing with the MTV show. They could have gone back and delved way deeper.
Yeah, I didn't see any of that. Was it a comedy or was it?
It's like, you know, slick. It's like really slick.
Oh, gotcha. It's like Twilight sort of thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's not the right move. Let me see. I'm trying to see if there are any big scenes that stood out. The big dance is kind of fun with the Thriller ripoff.
Yeah, it's a big time Thriller ripoff.
Yeah.
I wonder if they thought that was gonna be a thing. There's
like
all
the
these
dance.
Yeah, there's all these comments about Michael J. Fox not being like a good dancer and not being good at basketball and stuff like that. That when you read them now with hindsight, you're like, don't talk about that guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Don't bring that up. It's not cool.
Yeah, he was probably doing the best he could.
Yeah.
But he does win the game as Scott.
Yeah. And then one of the best songs come up. I like that last song too.
Yeah.
And everything's in slow motion. And Rabia let me know that there is a guy on the left side. What is it, on the left side of the screen or the right side of the screen? There's a guy
out
on the left side with his fly undone. He's got his fly really undone and he pulls his fly up in slow motion.
Yeah. So I saw that on the internet and then watched it today and it's fully there. Like, and so prominent.
It's not his dick, is it?
Well, I watched it a bunch of times in a row just to like see if I could tell. His fly is way open and it's so prominent on the screen that it's very bizarre. And then he even sort of like catches himself and zips it up real quick. But it's on like the freeze frame of the last shot of the movie.
Yeah.
Just such a strange thing to get by the edit.
I got to watch this now.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It's like a nice kitty take off your clothes.
Right. From the Oh, yeah. Someone just told me about that.
You don't know about Nice Kitty Take Off Your Clothes? Yeah,
no, we just talked about that on the show a few weeks ago.
Sex in the Dust and Aladdin. Or no, Lion King when he plops down and then all of the dander spells out sex.
I just saw that movie for the first time yesterday.
What's going on with your movie queue right now, bro?
What do you mean?
The Lion King and Teen Wolf? Like, you having a baby or something? Like, what's going on?
You picked Teen Wolf.
All right, fair.
And my daughter's 3.5.
Oh, I see.
Like, she had never seen The Lion King, and I hadn't. So I was like, why don't we watch this? It was really fucking sad.
Yeah.
And it bothered her.
Yeah, no, it's a troubling situation.
It was. But so you're saying when they, at
it's
the
Hamlet.
Beginning.
You know it's Hamlet.
Well, sure. Yeah. She didn't.
Yeah.
She didn't have that understanding. Yeah. So what you're saying when they put the paw down and release it, it spells out the word sex in the dust?
There is one situation where I guess Simba, after some – as an adult, after he doesn't know whether to go back or not, he like plops down and some dander goes up and it spells out sex.
Oh.
And then there's the Aladdin one with nice girls take off their clothes.
That's, yeah, I learned
and
about that.
And then there's the priest popping a boner in the wedding in Mermaid. When he's almost about to marry Ursula, there's like that little bishop.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
bishop, they have like his costume tents. Yeah, his little bishop tents.
Wow. Yeah. Boy, those Disney animators.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Sociopaths.
When I lived here, I went to the vet one time, and Jonathan Taylor Thomas was in the vet picking up his cat, whose name was Simba.
No. When? What this year?
This had to have been like 98-ish.
Oh, wow. You were here in 98 at the vet? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
At the vet. You know those LA things, like you see people, like when when I found my kitten and took my kitten to the vet for the first time. I went to write a check, and Tim Curry held my kitten while I wrote the check as well.
Wow.
So I was going to, like, the veterinary of the stars.
After this, I'll tell you my dark Tim Curry story.
Okay, cool. All right, well, let's finish with five questions then, because I'll pull up that thing and show you the guy in the stands with his fly undone, and you can tell me that story. And we'll get you out of here for Conan.
Oh, yeah. Tintin.
First movie you remember seeing in the theater?
I think I remember seeing the scene in Dirty Dancing where it was raining. I remember a raining scene in Dirty Dancing.
And that was your first movie, you think?
I don't think it was my first, but that was an early memory of seeing something. What year was that? 86, 85?
I don't know.
We'll see.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
First R-rated movie you saw?
Oh, God. Is Tootsie rated R? No.
Probably not.
No. I can tell you the first movie I had a sexual feeling about was
that counts.
Pacific Heights.
Uh-huh.
With Michael Keaton, I remember there was a boob that was in blue light.
Okay. And that did it.
And that I was lying down on the ground in front of the TV, my whole family behind me.
Right.
And then I felt aroused. Uh-huh. And that was the first time that happened.
And were you like, I could use another pillow, Mom?
No, I kept it to myself for 30 years.
Happy to break that on the show. Will you walk out of a bad movie or do you stick around?
I will now walk out of a bad movie unless it's a premiere and the person is there.
Okay. Yeah, it's a little awkward.
Yeah. But I didn't used to because I was cheapskate.
Right.
I walked out of that last Chris Farley, Westward Ho or whatever. That's the one movie I walked out of. And Michael, the one with John Travolta where he plays an angel, I walked out of that too.
I had another guest that walked out of the Chris Farley movie.
Really? That same one?
Yes, because
it's terrible.
It depressed him to see Chris Farley, like, because he wasn't looking great.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like sad.
His last movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember who that was, though. Let me see here. Number four, I tailor to the guest. So let me see. All right. Since you love editing, what's your favorite editing in a film?
It's the transformation sequence.
Of Teen Wolf?
Yeah. It's unforgettable. It's unforgettable. The basketball editing is terrible. Like their basketball game and like what's going on in the game.
It's really hard to follow.
Yeah. But yeah, that transformation scene is completely unforgettable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Best editing in a movie is
hands
that
down,
scene.
Probably.
Okay.
In a movie?
In any movie.
Oh, best editing in any movie? You asked me? Oh.
That's why I thought it was the Teen Wolf transformation scene.
Best editing in any movie.
Yeah, the best edited film. Like, what's your favorite editing in any movie ever?
Gosh, that is such a tough one, man. I haven't even thought about it. I've never even asked myself the question. You know, I would – at first, I think it's probably – this is not the answer, but Fight Club was edited very well.
Yeah.
That movie has really brought a new kind of – cinematic quality to filmmaking.
Yeah, for sure.
The way it was edited affected you greatly, not just like the CGI elements or whatever, but just like the pacing of it was really something.
Yeah.
I also think I was really struck by Roma's editing because there was just so fewer cuts than I'm used to what's going on nowadays and these long, long, long shots. So I guess their lack of editing was very impressive to me.
Yeah. No, that's a great movie. I don't know how he pulls off some of those shots. Amazing. Like, not for one moment did I feel like I was watching a movie during that movie.
Exactly, for sure.
Like, there was someone off camera with, like, a spritzer bottle for the actors or...
Yeah.
It just seemed so real.
I couldn't believe it.
And then finally, Movie Going 101, what's your theater rituals when you go to the movies? Where do you sit? Do you get concessions?
You know, I like the first half of a Diet Coke.
Okay.
I like the first half of a Diet Soda. And then, you know, it depends on how dysmorphic I am at the moment.
Right.
Like, I almost never mess with candy. Never candy.
Mm-hmm.
Popcorn, probably every other time. I buy my own food sometimes and go in with that. That was my family used to bring in like soda cans to movies and pretend to sneeze and open them while you went, achoo.
Yeah, I know that move.
Yeah. And
I try to sit
in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, I'm not good at making it on time. That is always the thing. I'm always rushing into the theater.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff, man.
Yeah, this is good. Thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, Charles W. Bryan.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that. Mr. Ben Sinclair of HBO's High Maintenance talking about Teen Wolf. Was everything I thought it would be. I wish we had more time. That's the one thing about these is when it's a PR setup, it's usually like in and out in an hour. He had to go to Conan, so I get it. But I could have talked for an hour just about High Maintenance in that process. Such a good show, everyone. If you're not watching it, you're missing out. Really, really wonderful stuff. So I hope you dug it. And until next time, maybe try and be more like the guy. Be nice. Don't judge people. Movie Crush is produced, engineered, edited, and soundtracked by Noel Brown and Ramsey Yunt at How Stuff Works Studios, Ponce City Market, Atlanta, Georgia.